Welcome to the Philosophy of Now podcast from Roots Media. In this podcast, we speak with thought leaders about their philosophy on life that doesn't merely define them in their past or doesn't come for their ambitions in the future, but is their life mantra at every moment, ever present, in their now. So join us on a journey of questions and deep thought that ultimately lead to one question that truly matters. What is their philosophy of now? And in the process of listening, maybe we'll introspect and we will meditate or even stumble upon our own. Today we learn from Hanuman Das. He is the founder of GoDharmic, a nonprofit organization pushing for selfless action and service by spreading awareness for hygiene, environmental action, positive change like feeding campaigns throughout cities across the globe. But Das is also guided by spiritual learnings and practice. A student of Ram Das and the Neem Karoli Lodi Baba movement, Hanuman Das sees the vision of love all, feed all, and serve all as a reality. A practice of his own karma yoga, or a medium for selfless work. He speaks to us about his vision, his mission, and most of all, what he's learned, what guides him to take such an important role in society, how social work can be spiritual work. The fifth Das on our podcast is not a coincidence, because to be a Das means to serve. And like all the other great personalities on this podcast, Hanuman Das truly seeks to selflessly serve the world as a means of his spiritual practice. Let's learn from his mindset and outlook. Together in this podcast, let's try to keenly understand how someone like him can also seek by taking a role in society, by going out of their comfort zone to help. Let's listen, learn, and introspect together on Hanuman Das's philosophy of now. Well, thank you again. So thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. So I guess where we usually like to start, how did this really start? And by this, I mean your spiritual journey, your journey to do something more impactful. Rather than just making it impactful for society, your mentality, your outlook is something more spiritual, something deeper. So where did that spiritual journey really start for you?
You know, I think people often think that spiritual journey starts. I don't think it does. I think we're always on a spiritual journey. And we're on the earth, but there's clouds there. So our whole life is that, but just sometimes we get a peak of something that's shining and something wonderful, and then attracts us slightly more towards that. But I think it's just your whole life. I've had people who have, you know, shown me glimmers and glitter, shininess of that spiritual reality, whether it's Krishna Das chanting Hanuman Chalisa, that, you know, just made me pour into tears, or the energy and love of listening to Ram Das speak, just being in his presence. All of these things are like awakening moments or self-realization moments that draw you further towards what you already know. I guess it's all, your whole life is spiritual journey. When I look back, you know, my grandmother used to live with us, and as soon as, you know, the sunlight came in through the window, she would look at the sun and put her hands together in prayer and, you know, realize that oneness with the sun. And appreciation for nature. And maybe we would have laughed at her for that, you know, growing up in the West. But actually, you know, these are all things that are leading us back to understanding our true nature and who we are. So, you know, where it starts, who knows? Who knows, right? Like, it's been going on for lifetimes. But where we start to realize it a little bit more and, you know, be awakened to that is definitely associating with Krishna Das, Ram Das, and learning about Maharaji.
And when do you find yourself like more, it made sense, you know, all these things kind of clicked for you, you know, I guess, like you said, the spiritual journey may have been something even potentially lifetimes ago, right? Building up. So, but when do you feel like, I guess, in your interactions with these individuals or in your readings or in your studies, in your practices, did you feel like, oh, this makes sense. This is my purpose maybe, or this is what I need to take more seriously in my life? If not a moment, a series of moments or time, you know?
Yeah, I think like these moments, when I heard Krishna Das chant Hanuman Chalisa for the first time, I burst into tears, you know, and it's not something I knew. I'd heard the Chalisa before, but after that, I memorized it within 3 days. I listened to it incessantly and knew that there was something here that, you know, I needed to know more about, explore more, because nothing up till that moment had, you know, hit me like that. And I had a similar experience sitting in Kenchi next to Maharaji's tucket, you know, just meditating as we were about to leave. I kissed the bottom of the tucket, right at the bottom. I just, something made me want to just be very close to it, and I just burst into tears like a madman. You know, it was a horrible experience for everyone around, because it was just, you know, such a, you felt like you've just touched your heart. And then, you know, I don't really think about anything that I do much anymore. I just follow that, you know, like if that's calling me in a certain direction, then I'll try to kind of be in that space as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those moments are really interesting when you're don't really expect that rush of emotion to come up either. You're not planning for it. You're not expecting it. You can't call it. You can't call it sorrow. You can't call it suffering. But more of something that comes deeper from your core, and it just bursts out. Or like you, I think you put it wonderfully, that kind of touching your heart there. That phrase though, touching your heart, what does that mean to you?
So in the Chandogya Upanishad, something, a beautiful phrase that's there, and I'll paraphrase it because I don't memorize it, but it says something like, the earth, the heavens, the sun, the moon, the stars, the entire universe, all living beings are hidden within the cave of the heart. So everything that we search for outside, for me, that's what it means. It means like every possible pleasure, gain, purpose, peace, prosperity can be found in the heart. Anything that's good can be found inside. So that's what it means for me. And just coming back to your question, that one meditation or one mantra or one thought, like Ramdas said, told me two mantras. One is Ramanama, Ramnam, and the other was chanting, I am loving awareness. I am loving awareness. And one, to be in the now, to be aware, to be knowledgeable of who we are, and two, to be love, you know, loving awareness, and actually sharing that love with everyone around us, whether that's through food or through service or through telling the truth or through, you know, being kind, being a good human being. So I think loving awareness kind of brings us into that moment of now, and brings a service mentality.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Were you raised in this sort of environment? Was this kind of something that was there early on as well? Did you feel like there was an environment conducive that conducive to, you know, for example, you're quoting the Chandogya Upanishad, you're talking maybe about your grandmother praying to the sun. Was this all something that you feel like now looking back was a buildup to you taking these actions, these thoughts more seriously in your life?
Yeah, I think, look, they're all around us, as I mentioned earlier, and it's just whether we are susceptible and have the right, the fortune and the grace to open to them or to realize them. Like, looking back, yes, the answer is yes, but I wasn't open to them. You know, I didn't have the grace to see that. That the sun is shining already. We don't need to have any particular science around that, but whether we realize that the sun is shining. It's a beautiful sunny day here in the UK, but actually I'm just sitting inside and, you know, I haven't felt that sunshine on me. I've just been, you know, in the office or in the house. And I think, yes, I was when I look back now, but perhaps didn't realize that I was ripening or, you know, that that was there. I traveled to Somnath, the great Shiva temple in Gujarat, at the age of 3 years old, with my grandparents, not even with my parents. I spent months in India and had that, you know, exposure and darshan and hearing of such wonderful things. I was exposed to bhajan, kirtan from a very young age, all around me. And they say that, you know, even when a woman is pregnant, that you should listen to the Bhagavad Purana and listen to kirtan and listen to chanting, and that has an effect. And you know, whether those effects were there that I know of now, or have taken a place, like, you know, I don't know. It's something that we do. It's something that, you know, happens to us, like, you know, it happens naturally. And when I'll tell you something interesting, is that when I met Krishnadas in London, I said to him, I'm going to Kenchi. And he said, why the hell are you going there? It's frozen. You know, it was the winter at that time, and up in the hills, it's extremely cold. The conditions are not good for travel there. And, you know, especially nobody's there, the temple's closed. And he said, why are you going there? Come with me to Rishikesh. And we spent a month in Rishikesh chanting Hanuman Chalisa every day, staying, you know, close to the ashram and spending time with Siddhi Ma. And my wife Sheena and our two and our one son at the time, we spent time around the ashram and just absorbing that space. And when I asked Krishnadas, you know, I told him about my feeling about the Hanuman Chalisa and all this stuff, and he just said, Maharaji called you, you know, it was your time to come, Maharaji called you, and that was it. You know, so I don't think this is something that we construct or create. Like, when it's going to happen, you will do what you're supposed to do at exactly that given time.
Right. Right. But I guess when it comes to you formulating, going ahead with Godharmic, and you seeing service as a form of your sadhana or your spiritual practice, how did that come about? When did that come about? What was the trigger for that for you?
Again, I think, you know, Maharaji was love all, feed all, serve all. And every story I read and, you know, inspiring example of all of these people who have come and served, just gives me that feeling of, like, our motto is compassion in action. And that's a book which Ramdas wrote. Another phrase we use is love all, feed all, serve all, so that we have these marquees around the whole, all of the 15 different locations where we distribute food for free, and then say love all, feed all, serve all. And, you know, that's the whole idea of it. So I feel that this whole Godharmic thing is, again, just prasad distribution, and it's just an extension of Krishnadas's chanting, Ramdas's speaking, and it's just a way of distributing prasad. And I think I wanted to create something that was very natural for me, and that had a modern application. So we have these wonderful ideas and wisdom from India that are universally applicable, but don't really get much airtime in average day life. For example, I was at COP26 recently. And if you think about the representation of Indian ideas at a conference like that, it was probably less than 2% or 1%. So you have tremendous values like ahimsa, non-violence, non-harming, but nobody's talking about that. You know, the value of the reduction of harm, animal agriculture and what it does. Nobody wants to talk about animal agriculture at COP26, where, you know, it's more than 30% contribution towards carbon emissions and towards global warming. Why are we not considering these values? So I think creating a vehicle for awakening such values within ourselves was the purpose of going Dharmic, like go Dharmic. Like to, it's a call to action, but that is a call to love all, feed all, serve all, and to create an outlet where people from all backgrounds can come and find peace through service. I think Swami Vivekananda says that, you know, he asked God for peace and he showed him how to help people. Same with Maharaji, when people came to him and said, how do I raise my kundalini? He would often reply, go and feed the poor. And it was about taking it away from something that you think you are, to realizing that we're all one, or that our common identity is much bigger. And I'm actually, for the last 5 years, I've been working on a book with Ram Dass. He's passed away before we could put it out, but it's called Be Yourself. So I really enjoyed the fact that you said that roots was, what was the phrase that you used?
Realizing our own true selves.
Realizing our own true self. So this book, Be Yourself, is an exploration of the Upanishads. It's an exploration of the idea of who we are, all as one, like the expression that, you know, within us is divinity, and that, you know, at the heart we're all one, and helping people to kind of peel away a few of those layers, or remove some of that dust, or, you know, see through some of these clouds that, you know, cover that. And it's been such an incredibly slow process, because it's such, so special to me. So, you know, we haven't put it out yet, but Be Yourself is something that I've been working a long time on. And it's my, it contains my conversations with Ram Dass on three major Upanishads. And I thought the Upanishads had such incredible wisdom in them for humanity, mm-hmm. that we wanted to kind of open that out. So, yeah, that's...
That's awesome. That's really, that must have been really, those conversations must be so deep to you and personal. I get you touched on one word that I've seen, and you mentioned that it means its presence in, I guess, the more global sphere is not as present as it should be. And that being ahimsa. Ahimsa, so, which, if I had to loosely translate it, means not harming. But like many Sanskrit words, you can't go by just the literal translation. You have to really dissect it. What does that word mean to you? And why do you think it's so important in today's times?
So I think it has a very ancient connotation. And, you know, I think if we think about how it can be applied and what it means, I think it's never displaying malice through any thought, action, or word. That this is ahimsa. Like, I will, there in the Mahabharata, there's a wonderful voice. I think it's Tuladhara, his name is. And what he says is, I will cause no harm, or I will cause as little harm as possible. That is the rule by which I live. And that is ahimsa for me. You know, so I think we can't live without causing harm. They recognize that from an ancient point. You know, every breath we're killing thousands of microbes and small things. You know, we talk about being vegan, but then we wrap our food in heavily in plastics, but it's imported across the world. It's, you know, causing harm at every step of the process. Harm has to be caused, like, you know, for us to even exist, to move. But I think the Gita's message, as I understand it, is to cause as little harm as possible. And the harm that we're causing, let's do it in service of the greater cause, like for our collective well-being, for the growth and sustenance of the world. That is the dharmic way. And ahimsa becomes a very active project then. You know, it's something that we have to do in the world. It's not passive, it's proactive. And that's why we have this go in front of the word go dharmic, because we want people to actually not just sit back and practice their ahimsa by sitting at home, but actually think about food waste in cities like New York, where you have such hunger, but then such tremendous food waste. Like maybe 30 to 40% of the food goes in the bin, and you have 10 to 15% of people or 20% going hungry. Now that's ahimsa, that is himsa, causing harm. That's violence that we as a society are allowing to take place, which if we just said that, look, supermarkets, you have to find a way to get it to hungry people, or give it to charities, or give it to distribution, and because it's the right thing to do, and food waste is an injustice, it's a harm. So I think the application of this ahimsa is very vast, but there are very, you know, common and easy ways to apply it. So many people will think of ahimsa in terms of veganism or vegetarianism or animal protection, animal rights. But I think it's much bigger than that. That's just an easy one core area, but there's so much, isn't there? There's so much that we could think about in terms of poverty in the world, allowing people to live in poverty, or the fact that, you know, industrialized nations have caused so much of historical global warming, and yet we expect countries that produce such a small per person emissions ratio to bear the brunt of the damage, to bear the brunt of you know, environmental impact and catastrophes that they face. I think that's all harm, and then, you know, our job is to try and find applications of that harm.
Right. It's so interesting you use the word ahimsa and the Gita together. One of my teachers used to say one of the beauties of the Gita was that for a text that ultimately tells you to fight, it speaks so deeply about the act of not killing, not harming. And someone like Mahatma Gandhi could take that one part of that and really start a whole revolution behind it. So that's really interesting. You also spoke about one of the words, which is also part of your initiative of Go Dharmic, which is Dharma itself. Dharma is also something that has been used in such a myriad of ways and so many different ways and definitions now that I remember you speaking of the Mahabharata. It's also something that I remember Krishna says, paraphrasing, that, you know, in this time we've created so many different dharmas and we've all defined our own dharmas that you have forgotten what dharma truly is. And so that really, you know, starts this whole idea for me. And my question here is, what is dharma then, according to you? You've having started a foundation, a team that works around it. And I ask you that because that same word, when you kind of, and I won't say a specific group of any sense, but it could become a very religious connotation to it as well, in the sense of dharma is me versus you type of mentality, my dharma versus yours.
Right.
That could become negative. I'm not saying it is negative, but that could become negative. But what is dharma to you? What does that mean to you?
It's interesting that you raise that, because you know these couple of points that you touch upon here are things that we encounter a lot. You know, many people ask, "Oh, is this a religious organization?" Or you know, "Which dharma are you talking about?" Or I often like to counter ask people, "What do you define dharma as?" So my understanding for it, and I think again coming back to the Mahabharata, so this is for dharma as well as Sanatana Dharma as a whole, right? Like, you know, the eternal Dharma for all of us, for all living beings, for the planet, for everyone, not just for a particular group of brown people from India. It's for the whole, every living being, for every tree, every piece of soil, plant and insect and animal. But I think if we think about the Dharma from a philosophical perspective, Dharma is the nature of a thing. And if you have fire, the dharma of fire is to produce heat or light, right? That would be the water, maybe to be wet or to be malleable through a container. And then when we consider what the dharma of humanity is, and that's what all of the scriptures are about, all of the texts, all of the itihasas and shastras, what is dharma? And it's about our exploration for what dharma is. And my reading from the Mahabharata and all of these wonderful, beautiful texts, Ramcharitmanas, Ramayana, ultimately, it's the dharma of humanity is to be humane, is to be loving. That's the Sanatana Dharma, the core of it. Everything else is based on that. Like when Maharaji says, love all, feed all, serve all, he's telling you to be a good human being. He's not telling you to read Bhagavad Gita or chant Ram Nam incessantly. He tells all of those things as well. But at the core of it, he's telling you to be yourself, to be your true nature. And you mentioned the Mahabharata, the verse actually says, Ahimsa satyam akrodo dhanameta chatushtayam ajata shatru seveta esha dharma sanatanaha. And it says, not harming, truthfulness, remaining free from anger, and charity. These are the four practices which you must adhere to. And these are the Sanatana Dharma. So if you think about values, the core which balances and holds this planet together, I think, is this religious? Well, even religion means to realign, right? In Greek, you'd say it's to realign. And I think that's coming in to realize who you are, to realize what nature is, that we are one, and actually it's a dharma to move away from that. So I think according to Hindu philosophy, we are all bliss, we are all truth, we are all ananda, and we move away from that. It's not something that we become. It's not a heaven. Maharaj used to say to people, why do you want to go to heaven? It is our job to make this a heaven for everyone. And that's the Sanatana Dharma, is to be the best human being that you can be, to be kind to those around you, to love everyone, serve everyone, feed everyone.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I completely relate to that, even in the sense where we see the Mahabharata go, right, where people are picking and choosing where their dharma lies, right? One person may say that my dharma is in my nation, the other may say with my country or my the government that rules me, the other may say my brother, the other may say my friend, another may say my child, and in that, and one will just say my ego itself. So it's that whole, where we also see that my different roles, my different priorities in my life really determine my dharma, or they follow my dharma. Ultimately, subconsciously, we don't realize that my dharma as a son, my dharma as a coworker, as an employee, all these sort of things really build up to understanding what is ultimately my priority in life? What is ultimately my goal in life? And like you rightly pointed out, where in the universal Dharma, as all human beings, what is that core? What is that ultimate Dharma is what we need to actually be following as
human beings. Completely. Yeah. And what I would say is, in the Western context, the way we live, where we are in the world, if you think about from a Hindu perspective, the four goals of life, karma, artha, kama, moksha.
Right.
And if you think about that and reflect back at, in my life, at least, I feel that a very large part of my life has been focused on what I call prosperity for artha and karma, pleasure, right? Dharma, artha, karma, moksha. And not much on dharma and not much on moksha, which I would use as purpose or peace. So I feel like that is a really good guide that, you know, if one was to lead a balanced life in the world, we would have in equal terms these four areas of our life. We're not against pleasure, right? Like Indian traditions are not, about sin. They're about have, even in Gita, Krishna says, I am artha when in line with dharma. So even prosperity is positive,
right,
if it's in line with dharma and not against dharma. So I think if the foundation is dharma, if Sanatana, the core foundation of who we are is there, then all of the other aspects are good. Have those. You know, Maharaj used to love to have tea with people. Used to crack jokes. Used to have fun. Used to enjoy family life. Rather than asking people about their spiritual practice, he would ask them how their son's job was doing, or how their uncle is, how's the health, taking. He was the Sanatana grandfather, for people. So that approach to humanity, and what I always love is the Mahabharata is such a beautiful epic. It's not just giving you a simple code book to follow. These are the rules. Follow them. It's saying, explore this entire text and see all the nuances of dharma within a dharma and a dharma within dharma, and go back and forward and playing with you and all the time. But ultimately, when you look at the one of the last final acts is Yudhishthira, Maharaja Yudhishthira, when he's on the top of the mountain and he's
right,
yeah. And this dog has followed him this whole way, and stinky dog is there, and like Indra comes from the heavens and he says, hey, it's time for you to come with me and be take your rightful place in heaven alongside me. You've been the perfect king, and you come and join me in heaven and enjoy every pleasure that you could imagine. And Yudhishthira says, I'm ready to come, but as long as I can bring this dog. And right. Then Indra gets mad and says, you can't bring a dog to heaven. You're insulting me and heaven and everything else. And then Yudhishthira gives a beautiful speech at that time where he's talking about compassion as the highest dharma, and that he can't leave this dog that needs his help, almost like that you've got the makings there for the future understanding of the bodhisattva,
right?
In Buddhism, where you stay in the world to serve, and you're here to help humanity and help nature. And at this time in India, I feel like dogs were given a lowly or a dirty position. You know, they were considered like a lower form of animal, not like in England today when dog is the new god, people's service. So I feel like they were trying to make an example there to show that, serve the lowliest and serve whatever you can through Yudhishthira. And if we were to choose that, choosing the welfare of all over right. our own personal pleasure, that right. that's what I really took from that.
Right. No, that's definitely, that's so true. I guess when it comes to, we spoke about what you're doing, we spoke about how you got here, or how we believe we stumbled upon here. What is your sort of perspective on the future goals that you may have? When I say that, I mean with like Godharmic or something beyond, or something like the book that you're working on. Or if it's not something more material like that, or something more, something that you can make an item, what is a mentality that you're looking forward to in the future, in the near and in the long-term future, something that you're looking forward to?
So I think to understand GoDharmic, we really try to make it an organization that's not, it's based on the value of Dharma and not a single cause. So we work on many different causes. Like environment is something that's deeply concerning to everyone involved. And, you know, whatever we can do to raise our voice for ahimsa, the application of ahimsa to our environment, is really important. We would like to raise our voice very significantly for that. And then, you know, just trying to be of service in every any possible way we can. When you go to see these toilets that some kids have to use at their schools, as young girls that go and they're just like hell on earth. And if you can do something to improve that condition, or, you know, help one school have one clean toilet, or, you know, deliver books to kids who have nothing, then that is each act of kindness for me just keeps, you know, drawing me to wake up every day and, you know, see how we can help mobilize more people to launch groups. So we would love to see groups coming together and satsang coming together to distribute food in 100 cities. You know, we have it currently in around 15 cities. And we'd like to have more and more people come together to distribute food together. Love all, feed all, serve all. And what I find is that once you develop the satsang and community of serving food and sharing food together with people, maybe kirtan playing, and, you know, that vibe of love that's created in that space once a week, when other things happen, you're trained, you've been going to the gym. So, you know, if there's a flood or COVID relief is required, or if I don't know, there's a natural disaster, you are in a position to do service, to help. So, you know, our food distributions are the gym, and we come to them to serve people around us, to give free food and to serve people. But then, you know, then all throughout India, we worked tirelessly. We worked with Uber, we worked with Tower Research Capital, the largest hedge fund, and we delivered aid to people, oxygen to people, food to people throughout the whole period. And it wasn't something that was planned. It was just something that we have to do because we know that that's happened and we need to do something. And that's Dharma, that's going Dharma, that's calling people to act. So we'd like to mobilize that in many more cities and to grow that and to call more people to join that and use modern technology in ways in which we can mobilize people in a better way. So we have a GoDharmic app that we like to invite volunteers to join and to share their ideas and introduce themselves and where they are and join our distributions and services, and then also add their various different values and different schools of thoughts. And there are wonderful temples that support us, and they run distributions entirely, GoDharmic distribution purely from the temple. Could be from Swaminarayan school, it could be from a different lineage of thought. It's not so much what you believe, but what you do.
Right. No, that's wonderful. I guess the one question, one of the other questions I have is, what we typically also ask, what would be your advice for the modern generation of kids, and that, you know, the many different issues that these youth face, right? Whether it's mental health, whether it's COVID itself, whether it's a sort of the advent of technology and how it's taken over, the digital world has really taken over, or whether it's the environment, and, you know, a bunch of, you could talk in any sort of realm, but what would be your advice to the modern generation of youngsters?
Uh, I think it'll be two things. One is to balance the goals that you have for your life. You're brought up and drawn into a system where you're going to be working the majority of your life, 8 to 10 hours a day. If you think about that, we work 8 to 10 hours a day for mostly for personal prosperity. The allocation of that time could be reorganized to be more in fit with the goals of life prescribed by Sanatana Dharma, which would be Dharma Artha Kama Moksha. I think previous generations may have spent a lot more time with their parents, with their children, with their loved ones, their extended families, and being in that, whereas our generation and perhaps the last one have spent an extensive amount of time working in jobs. So perhaps consider a more rounded, balanced life. And I think with the way, like in the US, you have this great wave of people leaving work for more flexible, for more a balanced lifestyle choices. They're choosing right. lifestyle choices in the millions. The second thing is not advice, but perhaps something we can actually learn from these is, at least in the West, there's not so much a tradition cling to the youth, and they're actually having to contemplate the wisdom that they have in front of them, the knowledge that they have in front of them, to find their own Dharma. So youth are really leading the way in environmental action, speaking up for the planet, speaking out against injustice, speaking out for equality. I think these are all youth-driven movements that I see. And it's actually the older generations holding it back. And there's a wonderful quote which says, in the 60s, we had an opportunity to change the world, but we decided to go shopping instead. One of the Maharaji devotees said this. And I feel, you know, then the following generation has all just been shopping. And now the youth are slowly waking up a little bit towards being much more socially conscious. And we need more of that. Like 10 years ago, if you were vegan in London, people would laugh at you. Today, every billboard sign, like I went to London just last week and it was plant-based this and vegan that. And, you know, it's like become a big thing. And if every difficult social area that we want to solve can be taken up upon by youth and finding their way, I think that's a great thing. In the Gita, Krishna says, at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, iti te jnanam akhyatam guyat guyataram mayat vimrisyetar asesena ho yata icchasi tata karo. And that means, iti te jnanam akhyatam, I've now shared this wisdom with you. All of this knowledge has been shared with you. Consider it deeply, consider it fully. And then the important line that he uses is, you do as you wish to do.
Right.
And do what you want. He doesn't say, hey, you're going to go to hell if you don't do this. He doesn't say, you're a sinner if you don't do this. He says, think about it. Consider it deeply. Consider all the varying arguments of this entire Mahabharata. And now act according to your own free will and desire. And do the right thing. So I think that Godharmic is a call for that similar kind of consideration. It's not do this or do that. Actually come with the heart and open to others, love people, serve people, feed people. Maharaji gave those open-ended statements. It wasn't an instruction. It was actually like Ram Dass said, be here now. Or, you know, be love now. Or be yourself. These are all statements of, you already know. There's no advice that we need to give.
Right. No, that's so true. I mean, that last line, or one of the last lines in the Gita, is so empowering, in a sense, where giving so much wisdom throughout, giving not only wisdom, but proving to you in a manifestation in the 11th chapter that this is who I really am. And even after that, it's, you are empowered to make your own decision, make your own call. You have the intellect to do that. So that is, like you said, one of the beauties of being human, in a sense. Ultimately, I know you touched on it earlier, but sort of the conclusion and the essence of the podcast is that one question of what is that life mantra that you think about in your present moment, your philosophy of now?
I mean, when I pick up the mala every day and I chant, the first mantra that comes to me is Ram Nam. Just Ram, 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 Ram. That's the mantra that I feel comes most naturally to me. But if it was the practice of trying to be or trying to be in a state, it's Ram Dass told me to chant, I am loving awareness. I am loving awareness. I am loving awareness. And I feel that everything with Godharmic, everything that I try to do, just, you know, as a husband or as a son or as a parent, or as somebody trying to make a difference, if I can just come back to that mantra all the time, to be aware of the suffering of others, or to be aware of people around me, and to give love from that. So I think Ram Dass really, taught that mantra in a way that, you know, you have the Bodhisattva ideal through Hanumanji, you have awareness of the Upanishads and the knowledge that we are all one, and the self, one with the universe. So, you know, that mantra really resonates with everything that I want to be. Ram Dass said, I want my life to be a statement of love and compassion. And wherever it's not, that's where my work lies.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, that I am loving awareness is the mantra of what we need in the world.
Absolutely. No, that was a wonderful conclusion to this. And I do really appreciate you taking out the time to talk to us today. And
thank you so much again. Appreciate it.
Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Philosophy of Now podcast. For more content and conversations like this, please visit the Roots Media website and keep listening.